We are getting so close to the end of what often feels like the longest month of the year. Welcome back to Psychologically Speaking, a podcast about human behaviour where research meets real life. I'm Leela. I'm a psychologist and researcher for hire, partnering with writers, creators, coaches and organisations who want their work to be grounded in psychology, not just informed by it. If you're curious about human behaviour, interested in evidence and you want ideas that you can translate, you're in the right space. So let's get into today's episode. How many hours a day do you actually have? This is usually the point when news outlets start running stories about New Year's resolutions falling apart. And you'll see headlines claiming that most resolutions have already failed, motivations dropped off, and people have given up well before February. And there's actually very little robust data on how many resolutions really fail. So I'd like you to take a lot of those claims with a pinch of salt, because they tend to say more about our expectations than they actually do about our behaviour. And here is an example. I've had 18 working days in my calendar this year so far, and half of those are actually allocated to my PhD. So that leaves me with 9 days. But those 9 days actually look like a good 5 hours of uninterrupted work on those 9 days, 45 business hours in January. And here's how I've used those. I've spent 20 hours on billable client work in January. I've spent 15 hours both developing and running my goal sprint, which is my big experiment this year, and 10 hours on everything else. And I've been to a networking event, obviously I do my social media, I've done a bit of billing and admin. So before you start to judge your resolution, think about how many hours you've actually had in your business or in your leisure time to spend on that goal. I want you to think compassionately about how you feel about your progress when you know the real time that you've been working with. It's also really useful to understand what's happening in and around your goals. And so in the warm-up sessions that I've run with goal sprinters this year, we've spent time unpacking the difference between what a resolution, a goal, and a habit actually is. It's one of the first things that we looked at, because when something feels off early on in our goals, we often realize it's because we're asking our goal to do the job of something else. So a resolution is a declaration. Okay. So it's a statement of intent. And it's the kind of thing where you say, from this point forward, I'm going to do this or be that type of person. And it's intrinsically linked to our identity and our values. You know, it helps us stay meaningful and hopeful. And January is full of resolutions because it gives us that fresh start effect. But what resolutions don't come with usually is that sense of structure. You know, they name what we want to change, but not necessarily how that change is going to be supported when everyday life resumes. A goal then is really different, because a goal translates your intention into a direction of travel. And it answers the really practical questions. So what are you working towards? How will you know if you're making progress? And what would count as good enough for now? In the goal sprints, we've shaped goals so they can flex. And that's why I asked my participants to do a 4-week check-in. And next week, you get to hear from the first 3 guests about their check-in. And I know, because I've worked with so many people now on their goals, that rigidity is the one single thing that causes most people to fail before they've even started. So if your resolution is the headline, that's your big thing, the goal is the working plan underneath it. And that's what you want to check in with right now. Okay. It's a really good time to be looking at what kind of direction you were going in and also the plans that you had underneath that. So then we come to the magic stuff of goals. And these are habits. And habits, you know, they are about repetition. And they're the small actions we need to decide, motivate, or persuade yourself to do something each day. And the challenge with habits, though, is that they're really slow to reward us. I can absolutely guarantee that some of those habits that you have started will not start paying you back any return on investment for maybe a month or two. They can be really slow to reward us early on because they don't give us that feedback that we're craving and that we need. And that's why being part of a group and talking about your progress and thinking it through can bring you returns earlier than working on something alone. And that's the power of community. So when you assume that something isn't working, actually it might be that you've just checked in a little bit too soon and that progress just isn't visible yet. So if we take my 10 available hours after me just doing that mental maths on the work in my business, that's where some of my habits are sitting this year. And it's easy to see why some of my habits have only happened maybe once or twice or three times. January is literally about getting into your stride and figuring out your goals. So if you're listening to this right now and you're definitely thinking, wow, I've not made progress, I've failed, this is why you're feeling that way right now. So I want you to do a reflection. And this reflection is, you know, if you're feeling a little bit uncomfortable about your goal right now, it's not because you've failed or piled on too much into your goals. It's either a resolution without too much structure, a goal that needs a little bit of refining, or habits that just haven't had time to show their impact. And underneath all of this is that wonderful human nature thing called impatience. And there's something really interesting happening with impatience. So comparison is one way in which impatience shows up for us. It's the one thing, comparison, that helps us to, I don't know, locate ourselves when we're feeling really uncertain. Social comparison is a thing that we do really automatically and unconsciously. We do it in social media spaces, we do it in face-to-face settings, but comparison is really intensified by ambiguity. So if you imagine you're in your goal at the moment and perhaps maybe your route forward, your direction of travel, you can't see the next couple of steps, you're in an ambiguous space and you are more likely to then start comparing yourself to the perfect version of you that was making lots of progress, or to, worse still, to other people who have got different situations and probably different hours in their day. So you can start to see how all of these things kind of come together. So social comparison theory is really interesting. And it just basically says, you know, we look at others to help us reduce uncertainty and give us a sense of who we are and our own concept of self. It's that whole thing of, who do you look up to? Who do you look down to? And who's on the same level as you? We're all doing this every single day, unconsciously, consciously, with bias and without bias. And I want you to slow down at that point, because social comparison does get a really bad reputation, but you can use it really positively. And I want you to use that comparison to really reflect on, you know, is this level of effort that I'm putting into my goal normal? Or is it harder than it should be? What's different about the situation that I hadn't anticipated when I set myself this goal? Am I investing in something that makes sense to me? In last week's episode, I talked about sustainability and I talked about that mental contrasting we do where we weigh up the cost of doing something and all the risky decisions that we're bringing in. The difficulty is that goals, especially sustainable and long-term ones, they do create loads of ambiguousness. And if that's where you're sitting right now, you're probably in exactly the right place. And that's because progress isn't always visible and that feedback is never going to be immediate. So when your information around you is very limited, your brain is going to look elsewhere. And that happens through comparison. And you're using other people's progress as a reference point. So that's all that's happening right now. If you're feeling shaky with your goal, is you're probably either comparing against yourself and a version that's perfect, or you're starting to compare yourself against other people who, of course, have different things going on. They've got different hours in their week, or maybe they work more hours. When you start interpreting comparison as evidence instead of a personal failure, then there's something really interesting that happens, because then you start to be curious and you're saying, what needs to change? What needs adjusting? And you can start to think about things differently, such as, do you need a bit more structure right now? Do you need some clearer feedback? Do you need to account for things that have happened that you weren't expecting? And that takes you into a very compassionate space. It takes you out of being judgmental towards yourself. And that is exactly what I was talking about last week when I said, I want you to think about your goals in a very sustainable way. So I have got a cool bit of research to share with you today. And this is a new paper that came out last year, and the title's just amazing. So the title is actually called The Bright and Dark Side of Avoidance Crafting. I feel like that could be my memoir title, actually. So this is a joint paper by researchers in Germany, Australia, and the Netherlands. And the lead researcher is Eliza Lopper. The study involved 79 German workers, and, you know, the majority, 77%, were female. So they used daily diaries and daily surveys. They used some scales, the Approach and Avoidance Job Crafting Scale. Love that. I think that's been produced by the author. And they also measured burnout through an exhaustion dimension. And they also looked at levels of autonomy and some time measures as well. So this was published in the Journal of Occupational and Organizational Psychology. It's a really good journal to get evidence from. Now, lots of these journal articles are written in language which can be hard to interpret and takes a long time to process. So what I've done is I've taken the practitioner bullets in the article, which are easier to digest, and I've simplified them even further. And here's what this study is telling us. Mental distance from any work stress or goal stress protects your energy from burnout. And when you can't change something, trying to avoid the pressure of it just adds to exhaustion. So if you think about that in terms of a goal, you're approaching a goal, but something you thought you had, maybe time or resources, disappears. And when you can't change that, when you've got no autonomy or control over it, then that's just going to add pressure. But here's the final thing. When you find yourself in a tough place with pressure, with reduced resources, mental distancing is going to help you more than worrying about trying to change the physical work itself. And this is just so helpful, isn't it? Because it's really starting to say, you just need to take a step back. You need to step back and reflect. And that's exactly what I'm saying about January when it comes to goals. It's the perfect time. If we look at this as an opportunity, it's the perfect time to say you set out with your intention, your resolution. You've put some goal and structure underneath it, and maybe you've started some habits. But let's step back. Have you actually got the time you thought you had? Have you got the resources you thought you had? What now needs to change if you're being compassionate? And how can you mentally adjust there? Because that's the thing that's going to reduce the pressure and the burnout feelings right now. So here's how I would use this with your goal, especially if you're in that space. If you don't have much control over work or home circumstances, and you're trying to relieve some pressure, and maybe you're trying to rearrange things, you postpone something, or you're endlessly thinking about it, then what's going to happen there is that you're just reminding yourself that you're feeling out of control, and that's going to add to exhaustion. But there is a real difference between avoidance and mental distance, and that's this avoidance crafting. So here's what you want to do differently. Okay, narrow the time or the time window that you're using to think about your goal. And there was a really good session that we had in our goal sprint huddle a couple of weeks ago, where we talked about this concept of locking in and locking out. So almost time boxing how much time we think or worry about something. And then the next thing you want to do is reduce the emotional stakes on all of this. You don't have to be impatient. You don't have to solve your problem in a whole day. You don't even have to solve it this month. You have not failed with a goal if 28 days into it, you've not got where you thought you magically might be. You know, let's see this as an endeavor that's going to last over many months. And you are impatient. We're all impatient. It's just who we are. It's so important, because you have to know that if you have stalled at this point, it is not the same as giving up. And you're not behind. You can't be behind on a goal that you're working towards, because you will get there. It's just that how you get there and the timing and the pacing is going to change. What you're doing right now is so valuable, though, because you're just learning what this goal is actually going to cost you mentally, physically, cognitively. And we talked about that in the sustainability episode last week. You're going to hear some of this narrative from Danny in next week's episode. So Danny's on a big Arctic adventure. She's going on one. And her January of Reckoning really is just looking at the resources and the time that she actually has available. And you're going to also be learning that the goal might need to change. And when you've got autonomy to do that, great, give yourself permission. You'll hear from Duncan on that theme. And finally, taking away the cognitive thinking time and the pressure, there's something really cool that Bhavani has done to her inbox that you'll hear about in the next episode. It's advice that we can all take about things that have held mental space or are living rent-free in our heads. Avoidance crafting is actually a thing. This is like the best news I've heard all year. Granted, we're only 28 days in, but as somebody who does love to procrastinate and somebody who's a deep thinker and reflector, so we're talking about having this mental distance rather than trying to postpone and put things off and add pressure. Is this avoidance protective? Is it strategic or is it fear-based? And what would it cost you to push forward anyway? Is that the right thing for you to do right now? Avoidance without compassion is not going to be helpful. Be very compassionate towards yourself in January. I am so excited to share the new episode of Psychologically Speaking with you. We recorded yesterday. You're going to hear from Bhavani and Danny and Duncan about their goal progress. They're all navigating visibility in this process, but they're going in their own way, at their own pace and in their own time. As you listen, I want to invite you to notice if comparison comes up for you. And are my guests using comparison and how are they using it? Thanks for joining me today. You've been listening to Psychologically Speaking with me, Leela Ainge. I partner with coaches, creatives, writers and organisations who want to bring psychological research, clarity and evidence into their content or thinking. That might look like surveys, research, thought leadership angles or helping you articulate ideas with more nuance and confidence. You can always find ways to work with me via the link in the show notes. So I'll be back next episode with more research, insights and ideas. Bye for now.